You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. You're tuned in to Tapped Out. Hosted by Brendan Tobin and Sean Levine. Only on the BetQL Network.
Welcome into Tapped Out. We appreciate you checking out the show here on the BetQL Network. Along with my producer, Jake Noaker, that's my co-host, Brendan Tobin. Gorgeous eyes, as always, buddy. I'm the sports machine, Sean Levine. Sorry, it's distracting. Let's talk some fighting. Let's make some money, because that's what we do here on Tapped Out. First, getting in the news, Sean O'Malley says Marab is his next fight. First, assuming that that is what actually ends up happening, we see Sean O'Malley defend his belt versus Marab Dvalishvili. What do you think the odds would look like, and where would you put your money?
Man, I feel like Marab is probably going to start off as a favorite, but I feel like that's one of those where I could see Sean O'Malley and those odds flipping by the end of it. By the time we get to fight night. It's such a good question. I just think with Sean, look, you got to give him credit because he has answered a lot of doubters. He dominated Cheeto. Which is a good turnaround for a guy that he lost to, beat Piotr Jan and had a stone cold knockout of Aljamain Sterling. I think the thing with Marab that you wonder about the element that he can bring to this table, definitely the best grappler that he's ever fought. And man, he has just been ragdolling people. He is not, I don't even think he gets enough credit for like how dominant he has looked over these fights. So I would say there, if it did get to a night, these are one of those where I could see myself playing the dog just because of the value of it. But I kind of like Marab leaning like decision just because he's got that calling card. Now, if Sean is able to like keep it at a distance, if he's able to dictate those terms, then yeah, I mean, I think he could probably do some things that bother Marab, but I don't know, man. He looks pretty unbotherable right now.
He does. Assuming that Marab, obviously he trains with and is best friends with Aljamain Sterling, if they're kind of on the same level, I don't know what they are. You think Marab's better. I'll go with that. We saw what happened to Aljamain Sterling when he fought Sean O'Malley and his ass got knocked out. So, again, I think, do you think it really adds a lot to his resume, though? Like, if Sean defends versus Marab next, it just kind of feels like, I don't know, he needs maybe somebody that's maybe a little bit more established at this point rather than new blood.
I don't agree with that. I feel like, for me, I think there's a lot of honor in defending the guys who are at the top. I think, with Alexander Volkanovski, Kamaru Usman, Max, when you are on top, I'm not a big fan of all these guys jumping to go and get these fights and multiple belts. First of all, it's lost its luster as far as being as special a thing that it was when Conor did it. And even when DC did it, like that jump from light heavyweight to heavyweight was just different. Like these guys who think like, oh, this is the super fight toy. Maybe, but like, can you guys be around for 3 seconds in your division, defend your division for an entire year, then go try it out. Like Israel Adesanya. Izzy Adesanya went out there, smoked the weight class, started doing it again. He's like, hey, can I do one jump up? Cool. Absolutely. Who's going to argue with that? Who else? But until you're at that stage and Sean is at the arguably the deepest division in the sport, this whole thing of like, it's not a marketable fight. Dude, let's be real about it right now. How many super fights are there right? It's like there's not that many right now. We talked about this with UFC 300, why it was such a hard thing to find. What is a fight that's like, oh, definitely do that over this? It for Sean, for featherweight and bantamweight? I don't know.
Well, okay, because Topuria beat Volkanovski, you're right. It was going to be Volkanovski. That would have been a super, super fight. If Volk still had that belt, and then that was versus O'Malley right now in his prime, trying to be the champ. I know you don't love that double status stuff, but there's something to it. Obviously, the fighters themselves care about it. The promotion likes it. And Sean right now is their cash cow. And I think that also, if he was to lose going for somebody else's belt, he at least gets to keep his. So there's a lot of different benefit for him going up and fighting a guy in a different weight class. But right now, I agree with you. You're asking me to give you that name, and it's really not there. You're right. Like, Ilya Topuria's name is just as big as Merab's name, is just as big as Corey Sandhagen's name. But so, okay, you're right. I'll give you your due. But also, none of those names do anything. Like, for casuals, you know what I'm saying? Like, you got to really – most people, unless you are a dork like you and I and watch every single Saturday night, you might not even know who Corey Sandhagen is.
Well, if you are, then get schooled because he's good. And then second of all, like, if you think Sean O'Malley is this guy who is going to reign supreme and can't be beat. Because the interesting thing with Sean O'Malley, I noticed this when I was in Miami for the fight card, right? Is that he's got a very young fan base. It was very noticeable. Like, when you walk around the arena, you always notice, like, if you go to a Chiefs game, who's got the most popular jersey? Obviously, it's probably Mahomes, but sometimes there's a hipper guy who's got, like, the youth fan, right?
Yeah. You
go around the UFC event, and one thing that's noticeable with Sean O'Malley is, like, all of his fans barely have facial hair. Like, maybe there's some people who, like, fray into the 20s, but most of them are under the legal drinking age. And so I don't know. I don't think that these guys, I think they're just going to buy into whomever he fights. I don't think there's, like, Topuria is cool. He's come on the scene. Like, I think he's very, very dangerous. Don't get me wrong. He might be a star. He's got all the makings of it, but he's not, like, that much more famous than Corey Sandhagen right now.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's the problem, is I'm trying to think of, I wish that Cejudo was better. That's my point. You know, like, I wish that when he came back, just for the sake of this conversation, that he had won his couple of fights. It didn't look terrible. And then it was like, all right, prove yourself against a dude that is a surefire Hall of Famer. But whatever. We can indeed agree to disagree. I tried to watch, like, the Roadhouse. I got through the previews the first couple of minutes because you and I were talking about it, and I was like, okay, I'm going to watch it. I don't think I can get through the whole thing, dude. Like,
I got through it.
You got through it.
I got through it.
Okay. Did Siskel and Ebert and Tobin give it 3 thumbs up?
I mean, is it like, I left, this is how I felt. I'm like, man, there were some real plot holes I wanted finished there. And then I'm like, I'm watching the Roadhouse rerun. Like, what am I expecting? Awesome fight scenes between Gyllenhaal and Connor. Okay. You know, Connor did, I got to be honest with you, I couldn't understand a damn word he said. He laid on the Irish. Like, that was
my problem with the previews. Like,
I don't know if that was by design. Cause, like, we've all
understand. I don't know. Whatever.
Cause we've all heard him speak great at a press conference. He's like this is the greatest fight talker of all time, maybe. And, like, I'm listening to the fights and it's like, I'm listening to the movie. I'm like, why is he talking so fast?
Chael Sonnen on line one. He's the greatest trash talker of all time. We know that. Brendan Tobin, Sports Machine, Sean Levine, having a little fun. Talk a little fighting here with you on the BetQL Network. By the way, coming up in a little while, a Big John McCarthy. How about that for a guess? Big John McCarthy, some say the best referee of all time, is going to join us here on Tapped Out. Brandon Moreno taking a break for a while. Probably a good idea. His career's been kind of weird, right? Like, back and forth. And then he gets the belt and he fights Davison Figueiredo a million times in a row. It was literally the only fight that he had for like 3.5-4 years. Lost a couple of fights. Feels like a good time taking a little bit of time off. He said he's not retiring and then he'll be back.
Yeah, I wish, you know, I think it's good for guys. I think it's good for guys to have that for reset. Sure. You know, one of the things with this sport is, like, it does feel like they try and keep the guys fighting like 3 times a year, the guys who really need it. But if you can, you know, reset it, I know probably, like, Colby gets flack for it because he does it too much, But like Moreno, Izzy Adesanya, Kamaru Usman, these guys who have been like at the top of the top, five round fights like crazy. Yeah, by all means, take 9 months, take a year. You know, I mean, like it's like we saw with Brian Ortega the last time around. Like it seemed like it really benefited him.
P-City, baby. That's my guy. All right, some fight announcements. Edson Barboza versus Lerone Murphy coming up. UFC 302, Gilton Almeida versus our boy, Alexander Volkov. You know we're betting Volkov on that one, right? We need to get him back on the show.
That was cool. I enjoyed that interview. Yeah, interesting fight, man. You know, Gilton's got to bounce back. He, you know, Curtis Blaydes really put it on because this guy felt like he was very much going to be the can't miss prospect. And then you think like his fight against Derek Lewis, kind of a snoozer.
Worst fight of the year.
Very much a snoozer, like I was saying. And yeah. then losing the way that he did to Curtis Blaydes, because Curtis, like he had a good first round, but he's a guy, I think this is a good test for him. Volkov is very durable. He's been, he's been in there with everybody. So I think it's a good matchup. I think for him to prove himself to bounce back.
Yeah, Almeida was a figment of our imagination. Like, he looks cool, but he's like Cyril Gane. He's fine. We've seen him fight now a couple of times, and he's UFC worthy, but he's not championship worthy. That's just how I see it. Islam's coach, this one will get you excited. Islam's coach says he's all for the Dustin Poirier fight, and it seemed DC came out and said that's a fight that has to happen. I know you're a big Poirier guy. Not only do I want to see the fight, obviously, and you can get good money on Poirier, kind of like we got a couple of weeks ago. We all bet that here on the show. But on top of that, I think Poirier could beat him. I think Poirier is kind of a bad matchup for Islam.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, when Poirier gets got, if you have a real big grappling advantage, and Poirier is a decent grappler. I mean, the guy's jumping the ghillie like it's going out of style. He's gonna... You know, hey, he almost got Khabib with it. He almost, like, Khabib has barely lost rounds in his career, and it looked like Poirier got him one time. He's going to, I bet you he tries to do it in the first round against Islam. He's going to try and do that stuff, much against Coach Mike Brown's advice, and it's going to drive him nuts. You know, like,
it's not that he can't do it. It's just that he's such a good boxer, and he's so precise. For a guy like that, normally it's like Nate Diaz, where it's like punches and bunches. Poirier he'll just find a chin.
You know what? It's funny, man, because obviously I'm tight with Dia, his coach, and like his coaches, I don't know what to like equate Poirier to. He's almost like the improv quarterback. Like, I don't want to say Mahomes because obviously Mahomes is the GOAT, and I don't think we put GOAT conversation on him, but maybe like Lamar Jackson. Like, he's just so fun, and he'll go out and just do wild stuff, and maybe like it'll drive the coaches a little bit nuts, but like only he can do that. And I think Poirier is just in that realm. But to get to your point about the matchup against Islam, I would imagine he's going to be a pretty sizable underdog going into that.
Sure.
And I'll take the value on him for sure. I mean, like, when you have a fighter that good and you're telling me like, hey, can he catch him? Can he get him in some bad spots? I think it's possible. I don't think that Islam fights a risky fight against him, though. I think Islam is going to try and take the Khabib method, which was pretty successful against Poirier outside of a fleeting moment.
If Poirier was an underdog in his last fight versus Benoit Saint-Denis, I think I got him at plus 180, maybe plus 190. He'll be like a plus 300 or plus 350 versus Islam. The only problem with that is it's going to be pretty one-sided because everybody's going to be thinking the same way that we are. So maybe it'll be a little bit less than that. Ultimately, if you ask me, it'll probably be like, if you want Islam, you're probably going to have to pay minus 200, 220. If you want Poirier, maybe you can get like plus 250. If that was the number, is that enough for you?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. I'm curious for you because you're a big, you're obviously a big Charles Oliveira guy, but he got dishragged the last time he fought Islam. Sarukian and them, they both fought. So this fight that's coming up with the matchups, like, can either one of them do anything that gets them to vault over Poirier, or do you like Poirier because it's a fresh matchup against Islam?
Well, I think Poirier is in a great position because I think whoever wins the Oliveira fight, they get the shot at the belt. I think Dana's pretty much said that they get the shot at the belt without saying that. And then Poirier can just sit tight because I remember we've been talking about, really now for the last probably year, Dustin Poirier's kind of found himself. You're making funny faces. Did I say something?
No.
Poirier's found himself. Poirier's, that's just your normal face. I apologize. Poirier's been in a weird spot where, like, I didn't know if he was ever going to fight for a belt again. And now I look at him and I'm like, okay, as long as he just sits back and waits. Maybe his next fight is for the belt. I wouldn't take another fight. Like, I don't see another fight that makes more sense for Dustin Poirier if you think that if you just sit back, kind of like Michael Chandler, same situation. Chandler, pretty much, if you think about it, over the last year and a half, if he really wanted to fight, he could go to the organization and say, I want to fight. Now, if he lost, he'd be screwed. He wouldn't get the Conor fight, and they'd have to give that to somebody else, and it'd be a whole other bag of worms. But you get my point. Some guys just got to be patient, and they'll get the shot.
Well, yeah, and, you know, going back to the Moreno thing, like, he's in a position to do that. Poirier's obviously made enough money. I'm sure he was in on the pay-per-view this last time around. Yeah. You know, for sure,
he's good.
Yeah, for sure got probably the biggest pop in the building, maybe outside of, you know, all the Ecuadorians that were there for Cheeto. Like, the dude's a legend. Like, it's been an interesting road, because I kind of feel like it's not quite Masvidal-esque, because he's obviously been a higher contender longer, but I feel like his fame after the McGregor knockouts is just at a crazy level. He's one of the more popular guys in the promotion. And so, yeah, we're talking about super fights like we were for the bantamweight division, yeah, him versus Islam's just more marketable. It just is. Like, who's, I mean, if we're going to say stars, but like most, he's not only one of the most beloved fighters, but he is one of the best. And so I definitely think that him getting to jump the line, or even Charles Oliveira or Surrogate, they don't have much of a claim other than, okay, Oliveira could say, well, I beat Poirier. It's like, yeah, okay, you did, but you also lost really, really badly to Islam.
Good stuff. Brendan Tobin on the Sports Machine, Sean Levine. Speaking of one of the best, coming up next, Big John McCarthy joins us right here on Tapped Out.
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thank you.
Back with more Tapped Out with Brendan Tobin and Sean Levine on the BetQL Network.
Very excited to talk to our next guest. You guys know we love the fight game down here, and this man is the authority on all things in all MMA, but I mean, this guy is like the godfather of refereeing, so a very big thrill to talk to Big John McCarthy for the first time. Big John, thanks for the time, man. Really appreciate you.
Brendan, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. It's nice talking to you, with you, man.
Hey, we want to get into this PFL thing, and I want to get into Bellator and all that, but I got to get your reaction to last week, the bite. I mean, I'm watching this, and I'm like, I tuned into the card late, so I get a notification on my phone. I'm like, fighter disqualified for biting, and I'm like, all right, there's no way. And I'm like, I tune in, I'm seeing this, and I'm
there's
seeing
always
it happening.
A way.
I'm like, how? But how? Have you ever in your refereeing encountered a bite? And did you go disqualification? Like, and what was your reaction to Bite Gate last week?
You know, it's funny because, you know, when I started, let's just, you know, go back into the caveman days, because when I started, there was two rules: no biting and no eye gouging. You could groin shot. Okay. That was UFC 2. Okay. But I think it was UFC 5. I had a guy that he bit, he tried to eye gouge. But I wasn't allowed to disqualify him. So all it was is I was taking money from him. So you know, that happened all the way back at UFC 5. But no, I've had guys bite. I've had ones where it's the guy actually putting a submission on them that, you know, ends up squeezing in a way that their mouth is open, and it's not a bite. It's their teeth are imprinted on the person, but it's only one row basically, because the mouthpiece is the other. This one was unique in the fact that not only did he was in control of the actual situation and the action, he took his mouthpiece out to be able to get the bite that he did. And that's where you just look and you go, no. You know, it was funny because the commentators at the time were like, oh, you shouldn't just disqualify or anything like that. And I understand why they were saying that. And then they saw it and they go, oh yeah, he should be disqualified, because you can't have someone doing that type of thing in the sport. It shows they have a total lack of professionalism. They are absolutely not mentally prepared to compete at that level. And they're going to do those kind of things. You don't want that in your promotion or your sport.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. You had to take out your mouthpiece to do that. That's great.
Exactly. That's where people are like, I said, do you realize that he actually had to remove, at least drop his mouthpiece off into his, you know, cavity of his mouth to get the bite that he got? I mean, it's crazy.
Man, oh, that's wild. All right, so this is a couple, man, maybe like a month ago, you guys had the launch of like the union between PFL and Bellator. It was a very, very cool event in Saudi Arabia.
February 24th, yeah.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool to see that down here in South Florida and see all these distinguished champions put together. How have you thought of the blend so far? That's a very big deal to put these two promotions together. What have you made of the unity so far?
You know, obviously there's going to be, you know, questions about, you know, well, where do I fit in? And that's for everyone, every fighter, everybody in the whole thing. But overall, for the two promotions, especially when you look, the UFC is the big gorilla out there. And Bellator had a really good lineup. They really do. And the PFL, I think, was a little bit behind, you know, Bellator in the level of fighters they have. And so with one move, you've put it to where the PFL now has an incredible array of fighters that they're actually putting some of those fighters into their season tournament, which is only going to, you know, elevate everybody in that. They have the ability to do the Bellator shows where they have single matchups and they have championship fights. And just the fact that the roster that they now have, you know, just available for them to use, is going to just make the fight so much better. I look at the heavyweights, because heavyweights everywhere are lacking. Let's just be honest. You know, you just don't have a big talent pool. You look at the 135 pounders or the 145 pounders. I mean, there's so many good guys. You can go down the list of UFC's 1 to 15. You can go down Bellator's 1 to 10. You can go down the PFL, you know, in the 145s. And there's really good fighters in every one of those promotions and those weight classes. And then you look at the heavyweights and, man, there's five, maybe six that you can say that those are really good fighters, and the other ones are lacking in areas. And so at least with, you know, Bellator and the PFL getting together, you can look at the heavyweight division. It already has been rejuvenated by Ante Dalí is going to be taking on Valentin Moldovsky, a guy he never would have had the opportunity to fight before. Now it's happening. They can put that together. They have Goltsov, who was in the tournament last year. He's taking on the Bellator guy in Linton Vassell. Now, he won't be a Bellator guy, but he's a Bellator guy. So it really has made it to where they can now make some really good matchups and give people a much better product overall, just based upon the talent pool that they're now working with.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've liked, like, I've always felt like Bellator, such a great eye for talent and like some of the guys that they're able to find. But the one thing I do love about PFL and Bellator, the old school Bellator had this with Bjorn Redmi that would come down here to the Hard Rock back in the day. Like, the tournament style is really, really fun. But that night they had that, I want to say it was like November 21, like right out of the fresh of the pandemic. That night where like a guy's life changes getting $1 million is like one of the coolest nights, because you could just see, like, you know, guys who had to do part-time security, like, their life changes. And that's you know, fighter pay is such a big thing that is always talked about, but I think that's a really cool thing that the PFL just kind of puts that golden nugget at the end of all of it.
Yeah, you got to figure that what was their last show of the year was a very expensive show for them, because they were giving out, you know, I think six weight classes of $1 million, you know, to the winner. And that's so incredibly inspiring, and it makes a fighter want to be there. And it's the one thing that you got to look at the PFL and say they've been doing something right, in the fact that I haven't been there. So it's not me, I'm not saying it, but I can only think of Kayla Harrison is the fighter that, you know, started really, they put their, you know, their emphasis behind, because she's a two-time Olympic gold medalist. She's the only fighter that's really left them. All the other fighters that have signed, none of them have left. There's been ones that have retired or things like that, but they haven't left. And so obviously the PFL is doing something right for the fighters. They're making them feel good as far as what they're doing. They're giving them the right pay. And look, they're going to have to pay more. You know, Bellator and the PFL, they have to pay more money to get those fighters based upon, hey, that's when you are fighting to, you know, match up to that giant. You're going to have to give that emphasis for someone to say, yeah, I want to fight for you.
It's such an interesting thing too, because, you know, you say like, you know, everybody, and it does feel like the fight community is so tight knit. And it's such an interesting thing. Like down here in South Florida, we have a lot of great gyms, but like American Top Team, all of these guys train with one another. So yes, like a UFC guy and a Bellator guy they're getting each other ready. Like Dustin, one of my friends, Dia Davis, like he trains Dustin Poirier, Johnny Eblen. They worked, you know, together a lot of the time. And it's like,
there you go.
It's gotta be an interesting thing for guys who are in the pro. You say, well, I can't go. These guys obviously know that they can go with these guys. Like they probably have more rounds than they ever do on the bright lights.
Yeah. The fighters, look, if there's one thing fighters know and trainers know, they know who's good. And, you know, they all train around each other. And, you know, there's ones that are out there that, you know, they get, you know, they have that, you know, backing with the marketing of the UFC. And, man, people will say, he'll beat anybody, but I can pick out somebody probably. They'll say, that guy right there has got at least a 50-50 chance of beating him. And that's because there are those guys out there. And the coaches and fighters, they all know. I talk to them all the time. And, you know, and I say, hey, how is so-and-so? I know he's training with, you know, this world champion is training with this world. Who's getting the best? You know, and they'll say, oh, you know, so-and-so every time gets the best of them. Don't say anything about it. And I don't. I would never do that. You don't lose, you know, you don't, you know, say those things because you lose confidence from people. But the top people are in that position, and it's hard to explain to people how close they are, because they'll sit there and they'll say, well, percentage points, what are they, like 5% better? 5%? We're talking not even a tenth of a percent makes a huge difference at that level.
Talking to Big John McCarthy, I should mention PFL has just announced their next regular season, April 4th on ESPN 2 and ESPN Plus. You guys can watch heavyweight regular season, women's flyweight regular season is getting going. And they got basically every week then thereafter, the regular season is underway. Is there one in this season? Is there a matchup, somebody, Big John, that you are like most excited about?
Oh my God. You know, if you're going to talk about the whole season, it's tough. But if you're going to talk about the first one here, I mean, there is just so many good fights that are coming out. And like I said, you have the Valentin Moldavsky versus, you know, Anta Delia, who is, you know, that's the main event. And a lot of times, you know, they'll do the main events with, you know, the heavyweights. And I go, you should have put this one, or, you know, put a little bit different one. But this one is actually a great matchup. The way Anta Delia fights and where he's good and what Moldavsky, because Moldavsky he's the hybrid heavyweight. He's not real big. He's a 235, 38 pound, you know, heavyweight, but he's fast. He's mobile. He's good everywhere. He's got good wrestling. He's got good stand-up. He's got a great submission game. So he creates problems for everyone with speed. Same as, you know, his mentor is Fedor. And that's what made Fedor so good. He was so much faster than all the other heavyweights that they had to work super hard to try to keep up with him. And that fight right there is going to be just an incredible fight. But there's great fights throughout this season. You know, Dakota Dvitcheva, who's coming into the, you know, flyweights, you know, she won the European title last year. Now she's going to go and fight on this one. And she's, you know, she could end up fighting Liz Carmouche, who is the flyweight champion of Bellator. Liz has got a very tough opening match. It's her third fight against, you know, Juliana Velasquez. So there's so many good fights on the card. They're starting it off right.
You've been there since the beginning of this thing, but calling all the Fedor fights that you did, I mean, is his aura still like, is that legit? Like, are there still, is he on a different, because I remember he was like, the first guy that my friend saw about, like, hey, you got to come watch a Fedor fight. I think he ended up losing, but like, you got to watch this guy Fedor. He's like, he's the scariest guy out there. I think maybe it was for Affliction or something like that.
Affliction, he won the time he lost. It was 30, basically, depending upon if you count a loss that Japan gave him when he got headbutted, or I see elbowed in the face when you weren't allowed to elbow and he got a cut and they gave him a loss on that one. He had like 31 wins in a row.
But the aura, like, is it that, because you, I mean, imagine being in the fight game, there's not many guys that could probably, you know, have that for you, but did Fedor have that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I actually became good friends with Fedor, and the first time that I reffed him was, I want to say, an Affliction, and it was against Andre Arlovsky, and you know, he was getting beat. Andre was putting it on him, and you know, Andre was feeling really good in that fight. Did a jump knee and got hit in midair and was out going down, you know. And I just looked at him and said, "How in the hell did you land that?" Right, but okay. And then I actually worked out with him after that, and that's when I realized, oh, this dude is just fast. I have to work really hard to keep up with him, and you know, and so I see where guys are having a lot of problems with him. You know, I thought, just looking at him, maybe he's just like, you know, super strong or something. That wasn't it. He was super fast. But yeah, he had that aura, and it was that aura because of the way that it's all about the way he conducted himself. He conducted himself with class. He never said a bad word about one opponent. He never, you know, he doesn't trash talk. He just has class. But he would walk out, he would have a stoic face, you know, the whole Russian, you know, don't smile, don't, you know, look in any direction. You know, he would raise one hand. You know, when they introduced him, he would go out, knock his opponent out, raise his hand back, and leave the ring. You know, and it's like,
so goosies. That's so cool.
He was special. He was really special. And he's a great guy. He is an absolute gentleman, a wonderful human being to be around. He's got a great sense of humor. He's a huge practical joker. He will pull practical. If he's comfortable with you, look out. You're in trouble.
Just what's your excitement level to see Francis back in MMA? Francis Ngannou, we obviously saw the age of Fapamet. So cool that he was able to do that, like to bet on himself and do what he did to Tyson Fury and get in the ring with AJ was awesome. Very tough knockout, but like, I cannot wait to see him back in MMA. What's your excitement level to see him back in the cage?
That's the same thing, and honestly, my excitement level based upon what happened in Saudi Arabia before his fight with AJ, when Heenan Fahev knocked out Ryan Bader super fast. Heenan is just a huge individual, 6'8", a good 6'8", probably 6'9", 6'10". And he is absolutely a guy that matches up really well with Francis. And so you can take that fight and put it together and you have something. You have a huge heavyweight matchup with Francis coming back and facing Heenan. So I think, I can't wait to see him come back to MMA. I love what he did with the whole boxing thing and trying and stuff, but it's so hard for people to understand how difficult that crossover is when, you know, you're facing people that have spent, you know, a lifetime just working on their hands. That's their whole thing, their footwork and their hands. And now you've been working on not only your footwork and your hands and your kicks and your elbows and your ground game and your jiu-jitsu and your wrestling. You can't match up. It's so much to catch up. And that's why what he did against Tyson Fury was just amazing. And that's why everyone loved about it. But, you know, he's an MMA fighter. I want to see Francis back in an MMA cage.
Big John McCarthy, thanks so much for the time, man. Go watch PFL's upcoming season. It starts up April 4th, ESPN2 and ESPN+. And you guys can see all month long as their heavyweight regular season and women's flyweight regular season is underway. Awesome that they got the rosters together. It should be awesome for the sport. Big John, it was a thrill, man. Thank you so much for the time.
Brendan, thank you very much.
back with more Tapped Out with Brendan Tobin and Sean Levine on the BetQL Network.
All right, that was cool. Big John McCarthy joining us here on the BetQL Network. Welcome back into the show. Brendan Tobin, me, the sports machine, Sean Levine, our producer, Jake, and you wrapping things up here. Final segment. We got good fights coming up this weekend. Let's go ahead and start with the return of Chris Weidman. You and I both just cringe every single time that guy steps into the octagon now. It sucks because he's fun and he used to be great, but also I just don't want anything bad to happen. He's a big underdog at plus 220 versus Bruno Silva. That guy is scary at minus 275. Where's your bet going?
I'm still going to go with Silva to get the win. Like, yeah, you said it. Like, Chris Weidman, I'm very happy for him. This is cool. It's in Atlantic City, so, you know, it's nice.
Why is he still fighting? On the real, why is he still fighting?
I think the reason he's still fighting is it's kind of like I want to go out on my terms type of thing. Like, his injury was brutal. I mean, we talk about the Conor McGregor thing and how crazy that is. I mean, what was his injury now? That was back in 2020 when that was? 2021. So yeah, we're coming up on about 3 full years. And so 3 full years, this would be his second fight after breaking his leg. But yeah, it was already tough times for him. But, you know, he's a former champion. He's beloved. It's going to be in that New York, New Jersey area. He's going to get a hero's welcome. You know, people are going to be fired up to see him, but I can't bet him.
Yeah, fights in Atlantic City. Our producer, Jake, will be in the house. Have you been to Atlantic City?
I've not been to Atlantic City. Well, I've been to the northern parts of Jersey, but I've never been to Atlantic City.
Jersey, eh? Yeah, never been. Actually, you know what? One time I went to New York and I flew into New Jersey. All right, we also have Aaron Blanchfield, main event versus Fiorio, the favorite at plus 160. I'm sorry, Blanchfield, the favorite at minus 210. Fiorio, the underdog at plus 165. That should be a fun fight. Blanchfield's a beast. I'm willing to pay minus 210.
Yeah, first of all, UFC, like, they forgot the F in her name. They put Blanchfield on the, I don't know if you see, like, how do you do that? Like, she's the main event fighter. Someone's got to proofread that.
I thought you were talking about the F in Fiorio. I was like,
that's no. Yeah, okay. I know. Look, I think, yeah, Blanchfield is the rightful favorite in this. Fiorio with the narrow win over Rose, which, by the way, Rose, good performance by her last week. Not a great performance, but a good performance last week. To get back in the win column. It was nice to see Thug Rose back in there. Yeah. But yeah, I think Blanchfield is definitely the rightful favorite here for sure. I mean, even with Fiorio going 11-1 right now, I'm going Blanchfield. We'll see what we got for sub on her right now.
Did you say Blanchfield or Blanchfield?
Yeah, Blanchfield. That's just like the UFC did.
They effed up. I hope she comes out with Blanchfield gear. That's awesome.
I'm gonna go with I'm gonna take Blanchfield by sub. It's right now plus 250.
That's where I was going also. Vicente Luque and Joaquin Buckley. That's another fun. This is a fun card. That's a pick'em. Where's your money going?
Man. Fun fight. Kind of a tough fight to pick.
Luque, I've lost a lot over the years. I feel like I always want to take Joaquin Buckley by knockout because he's had a couple of highlights, and then I don't, and then he does it. So that's where my money's going.
You're going with Buckley?
Yeah, Buckley by knockout. He has one hitter quitter power for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's got one of the greatest knockouts of all time for sure.
Right.
Luque is, yeah, you're right. Like, Luque used to be like the boogeyman of welterweight. Like, you're like, oh, Luque is good. And now it's like, and Luque is kind of getting up there. I like Buckley by KO too, which is about 2-1 right now.
Okay, I'll take it. And then my man, toot, get off the tracks, because Nate the Train makes his way into Atlantic City as an underdog versus Nate Emmers, the favorite at minus 210. You know what I got? Nate the Train by knockout. I wanted to say by sub, because remember right before we got off the show last year, I was like, I think I want Nate the Train by sub. And I actually played it. He was 14-1. Well, I think I screwed that line, because now you can only get him at 10-1, even though he only has one sub in his career. So let's just play him by knockout. You can get good odds here. I know this is my boy, and I'm a little bit biased here. Plus 550 for Nate the Train to knock him out. Nate the Train in the UFC. You're going to make that money with me?
I think I'm taking him by sub. I think I am going to go by 10-1. Really? Yeah. I'm going to take him by sub in this one. You know what? That's usually like if he gets a finish, that's how he's been finishing lately. So I love it though. Like, let me ask you this. If we had like his biggest man crush in the UFC, is it Nate or is it Tom Aspinall? Like, who is your faves? Numero uno. Cause like those are, I feel like if I, like, I'm not infringing on fan territory of those guys. Those are your, you know, you have been with them since day one. But if you had to power rank them, you know, Kelce, Mahomes, like who is your guy? Like which one of these?
Man, now you got me thinking. Okay, I'm not trying to sit the fence. I'm going to answer it. I think Tom Aspinall is a significantly better fighter, and that's been my case the whole time. When we talk about fighters, it's the whole thing. It's, you know, it's can he fight? Can he talk? Is he promotable? All those different things. For Tom Aspinall, I understand his limits outside the octagon. He's not the coolest guy on planet Earth. When it comes to fighting, and this has been my point the entire time, I knew that he was this good. He is a future champion. I would bet him to beat John Jones today in a street fight in the UFC, wherever. I think he's the best heavyweight on planet Earth right now, talking about Tom Aspinall. And I would say that even over your guy, Francis Ngannou. Nate the Train's just cool, man. Nate the Train's as cool as like Nate Diaz. He'll say whatever. He'll knock you out. He'll choke you out with the microphone. He don't care. He's Nate the Train in the UFC. What do you say? Rock him, sock him, and I look pretty good, and I can fight pretty good too. So, Nate, like, if I can kick it with one of them, it's Nate the Train. If I had to put money on one,
I agree with that.
Fight, it's Tom Aspinall. Nate, like, the Train's.
Nate the Train, Clarksville, Tennessee, just feels like you get some shine. You know, you just enjoy the Tennessee. The Tennessee Knights, that just feels like a fun night.
It'd be a lot of fun. And I spent a little bit of time out there. Not in that part. I've been to Jackson. I've been to Cookeville. I've been to Nashville. Not Nashville, Nashville. Brendan Tobin, Sports Machine, Sean Levine. Let's wrap things up with a fun game. You like games, BT?
I like games.
Okay, I do too. Who is better in their prime? Here we go. Nate or Nick?
I'm going to go Nick, just more like legendary status. I feel like Nate obviously has the most iconic of the wins because beating Connor on the height of Connor fame, that made him a megastar. But I feel like Nick, and even Nate would say this, like Nate adores his brother and like sure. talks his
I love
brother
that relationship. Who do you think has the better or more memorable call out? George, where are you at? I think he's scared. I love that one. It's probably got to be Nate, though, right?
I'm not surprised, mother bleepers.
Yeah, that's that. Thank you for editing. That would be the one. In their prime, who was better, Lafayette's own Dustin Poirier or Lafayette's own Daniel Cormier? DC or DP in their prime?
Very biased on this. I'm going to pick Poirier just because I enjoy watching his fight style more. I mean, if you're going to go credentials, it's obviously a two-division champion, although I know that his light heavyweight reign is murky because of the John stuff. It was like, you never beat John Jones. It's like, what a crime. You know, it's kind of like Poirier. It's like, oh, you know, Poirier, you've never been the undisputed champion. It's like, oh, sorry, I wasn't champion over like the toughest division for 10 years. My bad.
The correct answer would have been DC, but DP's not too far behind. And also, DP still has a chance. Poirier can still be champion. Like what I saw last time out against Benoit St. Denis, that guy could beat anybody in his division. How about better in their prime, Khabib or Islam? Islam, of course, being in his prime as we speak.
Yeah, I saw, who was it? It was Mendoza, their coach this week. He was saying, he's like, look, I get what, because I think DC was saying this week that Islam's more dynamic and has more tools, but the coach was like, no, he goes, but Khabib's the scariest person ever on the planet. Like nobody could touch Khabib, which makes me feel like Khabib probably toyed with Islam in training, you know?
Probably was some behind the scenes grappling. It would have been unbelievable to see.
Javier Mendez, by the way, is the name I was thinking of. I'm sorry I blanked on that.
Again, Islam also still has a chance to keep adding to his resume. All right, we're talking about in their prime, Izzy or Usman?
I'm going to go Usman because I just think that he was so close to getting to George St. Pierre. And Izzy, even though he beat him a much older version, I always just felt like Izzy's like a carbon copy, newer version of Spider, but like just not as dominant or as like innovative. Like he was, you know, it's kind of like a Kobe Michael thing. It's like, yeah, Michael, Kobe was great and Kobe won all the ring, but he's, you know, he's doing Michael's thing.
Dana in an interview the other day, I'm sure you caught this, said that, and he did, like, it just was like a Freudian slip. He didn't even think about it, that Usman was better than GSP. And I get it. Like, the last couple of years have not been Usman's, but yo, he was damn good when he was in his prime. All right, we had Big John on earlier. How about Big John or Herb Dean?
Big John McCarthy. I mean, I'm obviously biased now because he charmed me and, you know, he
the show.
Told great stories of Fedor and, you know, that guy's been around and he's just the OG. Like he's been around forever. Herb Dean's great. I feel like Herb Dean just also has more like really funny moments of like either letting a guy get just absolutely obliterated. Like you remember Herb, like the last image I have of Herb Dean that I remember is like, he's trying to stop Gaethje from pounding on Boria and he gives him the people's elbow because he just slipped.
The one thing about Herb Dean is he gets as big of a pop as any fighter when they announce his name, you know, and refereeing this fight, Herb Dean, the place goes nuts, whether it's on the undercard, which he never does anymore. But if he's there for the main event for years, you know that that's a big show. All right, hopefully you enjoyed this big show. For Jake Nowaker, and of course, thank you to Big John McCarthy himself. That is Brendan Tobin. I'm the sports machine, Sean Levine. We appreciate you checking us out right here on the BetQL Network. Enjoy the fights.